Ladies and gentlemen, you are now entering the Decent Christian Talk podcast. Enjoy.
Decent Christian Talk, episode number 108. What's up, everybody? I'm Gabe Jones.
I am Josiah Jones.
And I am Brendan Gallagher.
Hey, guys. This is a show by the fans.
For the fans. Wait, Brendan, were you going to do that part?
No, you got it.
Okay.
All right. We are in the 13 Palm Trees studios.
It's glorious.
Shout out to them.
Yeah.
But we've got a great show for you today. This is amazing. We've got Todd Collins from the Goatee Brothers on the show today.
Wait, what?
Do you guys know who the Goatee Brothers are?
Explain.
First of all, a lot of you might not even know who that is, Brendan.
I would love to explain who the Goatee Brothers are.
All right.
So I'm not going to get too much into this because there hopes to be more talk about this later on down the road, but the Goatee Brothers are Todd Collins, Joey Elwood, who happens to be the cousin of a guy named Toby Mac. The three of them had a project they wanted to do that was recorded during 1984 and 95.
Toby was the third guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait, yeah. Toby Mac is part of the Goatee Brothers? Keep going.
Yes, and they wanted to record this project. It was kind of a passion project of theirs, and it was put out right around the same time as the Jesus Freak album for DC Talk. It also was an album that kind of launched the Goatee Records label that a lot of people are familiar with that housed artists like John Rubin, the Katinas, and gosh, nowadays, Reliant K back in the day. Who are some of the bigger artists?
Did you say
right
Out
now?
Of Eden Holland, already?
Holland is one of them, right?
Yeah.
And then, Out of Eden was on there. So just a very prolific album. And
we just talked about House of Heroes
ways.
On the last
yep.
episode. So yeah.
Yeah. So it was a launching point for a lot of things. It showcased a lot of artists that they were going to be having on their label as well. Not in prominent roles Grits. Gosh, can't forget Grits.
Yeah.
But yeah, very, very powerful project that they put out, and it's called Erase, and it's about erasing racism and racial reconciliation. And, yeah.
Yeah. So that's a little history lesson. We'll have more on that later. Before we head into the interview, check out patreon.com/decentchristiantalk. For as low as a dollar a month, you can join our team. And you can check out our bonus episode from last show where we go in depth with the House of Heroes album, The End Is Not the End. It's our best bonus episode ever.
I think probably top one all time.
Top one.
Top one.
So
yes.
Out of?
Check that out.
Out of 108 episodes.
We are not going to have a bonus episode with this show. And we'll explain more about that later.
Okay.
Because this is kind of part, hopefully this is going to be like part one of something more to come later.
Yeah.
So anyway, talking about the interview, we need to set a little background and we need to talk about, because that, you know, at the very beginning of this interview, it kind of just goes right into Todd talking about some tapes that he found. So in context, if you hear him talking about tapes, you probably don't really know what that means. So that's why I had Brendan here, because he would probably be able to explain that for someone that either did not grow up in the age of recording on tape.
We brought the old man in to be able to talk about these things called tapes.
But he also knows the backstory of what was on the tapes, why they were important to this project, why they couldn't really do much on this until they were found, and what, you know, why this is such a big deal.
All right. So do we go back a year ago?
Well, I think what you need to do is talk about why the tapes were important first.
Okay. Well, the tapes were important because this was kind of a passion project of mine to get this thing released onto streaming services. And I kept asking, why isn't it on streaming services? Well, it turns out that they didn't have the original tapes to be able to fix some of the samples. And the problem with samples is that in the modern age, if you would put those samples on iTunes, for example, or Spotify, they could have been sued and things of that
yeah.
nature for how the samples were used without, I'm not sure in regards to royalties or things of that nature. And so what they wanted to do was, there was talk of releasing just some of the songs that they did have original versions of, that they didn't have to do any sampling, any fixing of samplings, but they couldn't find these original tapes. And the reason you need that is because you need to be able to go in and pull out this part on this tape so that you can fix it.
And when you say tapes, what do you mean?
I mean tapes. I mean it's on film.
But, yeah.
It's on
That's how they used to record.
They used to record using film, basically. And so they had to have those originals. You can't just take a digital version, of, like the CD. You can't just take that CD and then get rid of parts on it. You have to have those individual parts, which are recorded. Nowadays, we record on tracks, and you can see them on your computer, and you can just click a track out. You can't do that with these old tracks. You had to have the tape.
Yeah, it's all one sound on the CD, so you can't go in and individually fix little things. And even if you try, it's a remaster of a remaster of a remaster, and then
there's a lot of quality loss.
You're down the line with all kinds of different. It just doesn't sound as crisp.
So it was very imperative, and they've been looking for those tapes to be able to fix it. And there was a point in time where it looked as though we were just going to get a 5-track EP with possibly some new stuff, and that was about as good as it was going to get on digital.
And then a year ago on the Jesus Freak Cruise, Brendan found a treasure map.
So do we want to talk about that?
Sure.
Okay, so a year ago on the cruise, I set out on a mission, and it was to get these guys talking. Now, I understand there had been talk previous to that between them, and there was kind of hem-hawed, you know, do people really want this? I had my cassette still in the shrink wrap of Go To Your Race with me, and I walked up to somebody who I happen to be friends with named John Mark Painter. For those of you who don't know, he is half of the amazing band from the 90s called Fleming and John. The other half of that is Fleming, his amazing wife.
He produced What If I Stumble and a lot of other
tons of stuff. Yeah. Tons of stuff that you have loved throughout your Christian music
and
experience has been done by John Mark Painter.
He played the horn on the VeggieTales song.
Yeah,
come on.
And also did the movie for the music for the movie Hoodwinked, which Todd Collins also does a track on. A lot of people don't realize that. Yeah. Todd Collins raps on that. But anyhow, I went up to John and I said, hey, I have this on cassette. I have this on CD. Why do I not have this on vinyl? And why do I not have this on digital? And he said, well, you need to talk to Joey Elwood and you need to talk to Toby Mac. And he said,
easier said than done.
Actually, pretty easy.
Well, if you're on a
boat,
usually,
but I found out Joey was on the boat.
Yes.
So that helped. And he explained the situation with the tracks, that there was an issue there. He said, but if we can find them, you know, yeah. And so I went a hunting and I found Joey and I talked to him for a bit. I found Toby and I showed Toby the cassette. He's just like, whoa, like, I haven't seen that in forever. And I said, yeah, I want this on digital. And he said, okay, I'm on board, man. He goes, it's Joey. You got to get on board. Hmm. He says, if you can get Joey on board, I'm on board. So I walked down that hall, literally just got done talking to him. Walked down the hall, turned. I'm like, that's Joey. And I saw Joey and I'm like, hey, Joey, I need to talk to you. And I pulled the cassette out and showed him. He's like, oh, man. And he said, well, you got to get Toby on board. I said, funny you should mention that. I just talked to Toby.
It sounds like they were passing the buck to each other there a little bit. But
and I just stayed on top of it after the cruise. John and I kept communicating on it. And I kept asking, hey, where are we at? Where are we at? And I'm not going to get too much into where we're at because that's going to be discussed in the phone call. But
Side note, if you want someone like DC Talk or whoever else to get back together and you bug them enough, you get a Jesus Freak cruise. And they listen to people. And so Brendan, prime example of that, has this gold wrapped in a cassette. Mm-hmm. And just that topic, I mean, I'm sure that's, I mean, Brendan mentioned it to them. I'd like to think that they probably have been asked that multiple times over the years. And then
especially recently.
Here we are today.
And that's what brings us to the interview. So without further ado, here is our interview with Todd Collins.
All right, hit that horn, babe. Let's dance. Why do we hate our brother? Why do we hate our system?
Why don't we love each other? I don't understand. Where did all the love go?
It's actually happening, believe it or not, and you heard it here first. It's actually happening. I just got word from Joey that he got. As a matter of fact, I've got to go pick up the tapes today. I've got to go pick up the master tapes from the office today and take them to have them transferred to digital, to Pro Tools and so forth, because everything is on 2-inch tapes and ADATs. And but it's actually going to happen. We've been talking about this for probably 3 years, Gabe. I mean, we've been talking about this for a while, and me and John especially have really championed it, just because it's been a pet project. John, even though he didn't produce it on the original, he's producing it with me on the re-release, but he was extremely involved in the making of it, you know, and so forth. And it's just been a passion project for us to try and get it back out, because I don't know if you know, he may have told you, but the reason why we couldn't release it or offer it up to digital platforms and stuff is because there's so many samples on there, right, and it would just cost way too much nowadays to get those cleared, you know?
Yeah.
So we've stayed away from that. And so what we're doing is, and you probably already know, we're going in, and the samples that need to be replaced, we're just going to literally replay them, make them a little bit different, to where they still fit, but, you know, but still keeping the integrity and the feel of the record, and you know how all that stuff goes. So the first phase is actually the hardest phase, is getting it kind of reeling it in, you know, getting it transferred to digital and seeing what we've got and seeing what we can't use and so forth. Once we get all that squared away and make notes and storyboards and chalkboards and all that stuff and start recording, that'll start being the easy and the fun part. So I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be a fun project, and it literally starts. I mean, as soon as I go get the tapes, I've got to go get them and drop them off at this studio that literally does analog to digital transfers, because not too many people in Nashville or anywhere do that
anymore.
So once there's no need. I mean, nobody does this anymore. Nobody takes old tapes and has them because you have to rebake the tapes because the tapes are old, and then you have to transfer them. And so, and you have to have the machine that reads all that stuff, you know? So a lot of studios don't have that anymore. So I'm anxious to get that done and excited to get that done and then get going and get in the studio. We've got a bunch of plans to get a bunch of different stuff, not different, but it'll be the same record, but it'll be better. You know what I'm saying? We're gonna update some stuff. We're gonna make it sound a lot better, and you know, so it'll be fun. It's gonna be cool.
How does it feel for you? Because every time I've gotten online, it seems like within the last couple months, it seems like somebody new is like, "Hey, I just found this album from the '90s, and I've never heard it before." Like, how does it feel for you that this is just like getting the attention 25 years later? I mean, it's kind of bittersweet because of why it's getting the attention, but how is that for you?
It's like you said, it's a little bittersweet. I mean, when we made this record, me and Joey and Toby made this record back in 96, I want to say 96 or 90, 96. Well, it released in 96. We made it in 94, 95, but it was kind of a passion project because here was the thing. We were these young guys that owned this upstart, fledgling label, up-and-coming label, and we were wanting to make records that sounded like what we liked on the radio, because Christian music at the time was not real edgy.
Still not.
But we – maybe arguably even worse now.
Yeah.
But we just wanted to make records that we like to listen to. And at the time, we were listening to things like Eric B. and Rakim, Brand Nubian, Run DMC, Boogie Down Productions, KRS-One, all those guys. And some of those guys would kind of insert their spiritual beliefs. Most of the time, that was coming from an Islamic perspective of their religion and stuff. And that was accepted in the hip hop culture. And so we started talking one day. We were like, what if we did this from a Christian perspective? We'd probably get roasted, you know? Mm. And so we kind of started debating that. And we were like, you know what? What if we came up with a record or a concept of doing basically the same thing from a Christian perspective, but not necessarily overtly militant about it. Like, not, I say militant, maybe that's not the right word, maybe overtly in your face about it, and more coming from a perspective of, well, we were raised in the South with some institutional racism, and we were, you know, that we didn't know at the time, and we're just, you know, we're trying to step that back, and kind of coming from a Christian perspective and a love perspective. Does that make sense? And so yeah, that's, you know, kind of shining a light on our faults, or our things that we grew up with, or our some of our skeletons, so to speak. But and so that was kind of the impetus behind making the record to begin with. We never had any idea that it would kind of hold up and kind of stand the test of time over these years. You know, and it's, and here's the thing, Gabe, I have gone back very few times over the last years that we released it. That's, I guess, what is it? 90, if that's 96.
Yeah.
That's what? 25 years ish. Right. Very few times have I gone back to listen to it, because here's the thing, as a producer on stuff that I've worked on, it's hard for me to kind of listen to music to enjoy it anyway without picking it apart and dissecting it and that kind of thing. But especially the stuff that I've worked on and produced, I rarely go back and listen to it because I just don't enjoy it. I don't like it, including the DC Talk stuff. I hear the DC Talk stuff for what it should have been rather than what it is to enjoy it, you know? So with that being said, very few times I would go back to it. But the funny thing is the very few times that I would go back to it, I'd listen to it and go, that actually doesn't sound too bad still. You know, it doesn't, you know, it still kind of stands up. Some of the messages are still very relevant and stuff. And so now, fast forward to now, and it's kind of come back up because of the situation in our society and our culture and everything, you know, it's become even more relevant, you know? So to answer your question in long form, it's humbling. I'm hoping that we can get it out and it can be, you know, some sort of something. I'm not trying to affect change. That, you know, a record's not necessary, especially a Christian record that this small. I don't have any aspirations of it doing big things and that kind of stuff. But you know what? Hopefully it can be a part of the conversation to finally do away with a bunch of this crap that we've been dealing with for years and years and years, you know? So, it's humbling. I love the fact that people still like it and still listen to it. And hopefully whenever we get it back out there and somewhat updated and so forth, that people will like it even more and other people will catch on to it for the right reasons, you know?
How intimidating was it to go into the studio with that subject matter? Even like doing that today, how intimidating is that for you? Because, you know, especially for Toby, he's putting his professional career at stake, because there's a lot of people that still feel the way that they do. Intimidating is that?
Honestly, Gabe, way more now than it was back then. And the reason why is because we were young and we were, quote, executives, end quote, of a record label that we had no idea what we were doing. We were throwing stuff against the wall, and the stuff that stuck, we stuck with, you know? So I think ignorance back then was bliss. I think now it's a lot more intimidating because there's more of a responsibility because I'm older and wiser and, you know, so, there's a little bit of intimidation, but it's almost like I come from an athletic background. I played high school and college basketball and so forth. So I kind of look at it like it's a competition, like it's a training period. Like, you know, okay, I've got to get my body in shape. Well, you know, I want to see if I can get to this point right here. That's kind of almost like how I look at this. I want to get this project to this point and then see what happens, you know? And if it means, you know, laying it on the line as far as beliefs and question and people questioning, you know, how I was brought up or what I believe or how I feel or that kind of stuff, then that's part of the deal, you know? Hmm. But yes, it is a little bit intimidating, and there's a responsibility that goes with it, you know?
Right. You talked about how you guys had been talking about doing that for years back in the 90s. What were some of the plans, short term, long term? Did you guys plan on maybe doing more after that, and it just didn't ever happen, or what was the mindset going in way back then?
We wanted to make going into it. We wanted to make an art piece that had something with some roots to say. That was kind of what we. Because here was the thing. It was the Goatee Brothers were never going to be touring. We couldn't, you know, Toby right. was doing his thing with DC Talk. And then me and Joey was running Goatee Records. And I was basically in charge of all the A&R for all of our artists. So he was the president. I was basically the vice president, even though we didn't give ourselves titles. We all owned it, but we knew we weren't going to be able to go on tour. So we wanted to make more of an art piece that had something to say. And so once we got it out, we realized, well, we can't really market this very much because we've got artists on our roster that deserve those marketing funds to go towards them. So we didn't really market the record very much. And it kind of honestly took on a life of its own. And then we kind of realized that life of its own once it won a Dove Award. And we were like, wait a second, where did this come from? You know, it won a Dove Award. Are you kidding me? And so, you know what? We never actually talked about doing a volume two. We never talked about doing something else just because I was producing and A&Ring tons of records. Joey was running the label and Toby was overseeing everything and being part of DC Talk. So we never actually spoke about it. It's funny. We would have loved to have done something like that. I know all three of us would have, but it never came to fruition because we knew that we couldn't do anything about it. We couldn't tour. We couldn't put a band together. We couldn't, you know. And so we only sold about 25 to 30,000 records. And back then that was not a lot. Back now, if we'd sold that, it'd be amazing, you know?
Yeah.
But back then, compared to what Out of Eden was doing, and then Sonic Flood and Jennifer Knapp and all those guys were going 250 to 750 deep, you know, and we didn't, you know, that was a nothing record for us. So we were just like, all right, cool. We did it. We like it. It's cool. It's a piece of art. It actually has some depth to it in the message. And that was kind of how we left it. And that was it.
Now, you guys worked with DC Talk, obviously Toby did. How important was this? These were obviously not DC Talk B-sides. Like, these were intentionally written for this record. How important was that for you guys to make that aside from DC Talk?
Again, it was important to us because it was a passion project. And to be honest with you, because we were so young as a label and as producers and that kind of stuff, it gave us something else to work on. You know what I'm saying? In other words, instead of sitting in an office and trying to hustle to get things going and that kind of stuff, we kind of made projects for ourselves. So we had done DC Talk. DC Talk was in the can. The record was in the can and done. And, you know, we still had things that we wanted to do creatively. So that was kind of what that was. It was, we never looked at it from a standpoint. In other words, we wrote the song. And to be honest with you, Joey Elwood, the intellectual of the three of us, he was kind of the impetus behind the concepts and the lyrics. And a lot of those lyrics are really deep. All of that stuff came from Joey. And so those songs, like you said, were written specifically for that. And then if we felt like, oh yeah, well, K-Max, yeah, he could sing on this. Let's bring him in and have him sing on this. And let's get Mark Stewart to come in. Let's have him sing on this. And let's get, you know, and so that's kind of how we formed it. It was kind of a situation where does he fit this and does he fit on this song? And if not, then let's wait or let's not have it. I had Mike Tate come in and Mike Tate sung on the record. And it just didn't work. It didn't work for the song, so we didn't use it. So there's some stuff with Mike Tate on it in the vaults that has never ever been heard because it never obviously didn't make the record. Now Do I still hear about it every time I see Mike Tate? Then yeah, he jokes with me and he says, nobody's ever taken me off a record but you. You are the only ones ever taken me, you know. Of course, we joke about it, but it just didn't work for the song. So that's kind of how those songs came about. They were never, like you said, they were never B-sides for DC Talk. They were never even inspired by DC Talk, to be honest with you.
Hmm. Take me back to when you guys were in the studio back then. How hard was that to actually work? Because that was, in context, that was the Jesus Freak era. So DC Talk was incredibly busy with in the studio, touring. How hard was it even for you three guys to get in there at all?
It was tough to get Toby. That was really the only thing about it. Because me and Joey stayed at home. I toured with DC Talk as their drummer and percussionist for the Free at Last years and the early part of the Jesus Freak tours. So I was on the road with them for about 2 or 3 years. Once Goatee started to take off, it was obvious that I couldn't continue to stay on the road. I had to be at home, staying at home in the studio with our artists, you know, whether I was producing or just A&Ring and helping them guide their project. It was obvious that I needed to stay home. Obviously, Joey was at home as well. He was always at home, kind of helping run things. So from that standpoint, it was not hard for us as a collective to get in the studio, except for Toby. So in other words, we had guys like John Painter. Me and Joey would go in the studio all the time. John Painter would meet us and we'd work on stuff. Joe Baldridge was the guy that engineered a lot of it back then. And so it was easy for us to get in there as long as everybody's schedules lined up. Toby, we would have to be deliberate about getting him in. You know, if he was off the road, we'd say, hey, Toby, listen, man, we need you to do such and such. And on top of that, even the harder part of that was, hey, Toby, we need you to write this verse. You need to write your verse for Wages of Sin, you know. And so we couldn't get him in the studio until he had written it. Well, Toby's not a fast writer. He's a deliberate writer. And so we would have to, you know, we would have to take time. So it took us probably, put it this way, Gabe, we didn't go in the studio and just bang it out. It took us probably close to a year and a half to make that record on and off. Because at the same time, you got to remember, I was working on DC Talk. So this whole Erase thing was kind of a side project. So I was working on DC Talk. We were also working with Christafari early days. We were also working on the Out of Eden records, you know, that kind of stuff. So the Erase thing kind of, like I said, it goes back to being a passion project. We would have some time. We'd be like, man, let's go in there and work on some Erase stuff. And so it over the course of about a year and a half, we would work on it on and off. If we put it all back to back, we probably could have gotten it done in 3 or 4 months, 5 months maybe. But yeah, it was tough to get Toby in there. I know that was a long answer to a short question, but it was tough getting Toby in there just because he was just so busy, you know. And Jesus Freak, we had no idea that Jesus Freak was going to do what it did. We were in there making a record that we thought was great. We didn't know it was going to be groundbreaking and classic, but it came out and it just completely took off. And of course, once that happened, DC Talk had to, you know, kind of follow that, hold on to the reins and hold on as tight as they could, you know?
Yeah. I think it's interesting that you say all these years later, as you guys are heading back into the studio, that this is still a passion project. And a lot of that's because of the subject matter. Why do you think people still hunger for this content? And, you know, why do you think music is the avenue that people go to when it comes to having this conversation?
Because I think that music can say things in ways that can't be said in a conversational way. You know, you can sometimes stretch the boundaries a little bit with music. And to be honest with you, I think at the core, most people want to do what's right. They want to be good. They want to be viewed as good, as morally good. And racism is not morally good, plain and simple. And the reason why I think it's still a passion project for us is because, honestly, Gabe, straight up, plain and simple, we have made our careers has been on the backs of black music and black culture. I mean, let's face it, Goatee Records was built on black music and black culture. And I grew up in a very black culture centric type way growing up, you know, with basketball. And like I said, my dad was very into soul and jazz music. I mean, my whole life has been influenced by black culture, African culture. I have a degree in Afro and Cuban percussion. That's all based on. So my whole life has been about, either directly or indirectly, has been about a black culture. You know, the way I dress, the way I, you know, the music I listen to, the music I make, the business that I've had over the last 30 years. You know, so I mean, it's a passion project, but it's like it's almost like we have to do this. I mean, it's almost like eating or drinking water or something. It's just, this is natural. It feels natural, you know?
Hmm. You talked about all the albums that you worked on and how you're able to go back and listen to this and still tell mm-hmm. that it holds up. So having said that, where does this project rank in your career?
As far as my top being at towards the top of the list, like top five-ish type thing.
Sure, sure.
It would have to be. It's definitely in the top three of, okay. of records that I've worked on for sure. I would have to say. You know what? I'd probably put it at number two. I would have to say that. Number one, my favorite record I ever worked on is probably. Free at Last. Mm. Number two is Erase. Number three is either Bloom or Jesus Freak. And then number four is probably a Pee Wee Callens record. I did a record for an artist named Pee Wee Callens who was on my label after Goatee Records. And that was a record to me that still sounds great, and it's got great songs, and it's just fun. I'd have to put Factors of the Seven up there. That was a great record for me to work on. But yeah, I've never really, that's a great question. I've never really been asked that question on, you know, how I would rank, you know, where that would rank or where the Erase record would rank. Probably two or three, somewhere around there. Mm.
That's a pretty good list, by the way.
Thanks, man.
Should feel good about that. I guess
last completely point. Lucky, completely lucky.
Oh yeah. But I mean, yeah, that's an amazing list just to even think about. Before we head out, I just kind of want to know what you want to get out of this project. You know, going back in, is this just to kind of preserve history, or why is this mm-hmm. so important for you guys to finish this?
You know what? Honestly, it's yes, it is to preserve history. And you know what? To be honest with you, Gabe, I think for me, I can't speak for Toby and Joey and John and those guys and all the guys that are working on it. For me, it's kind of a legacy piece. You know, I want this to be something that my grandkids, when I'm dead and gone, and their kids can go back and listen to and say, you know what? Old grandpa, he was pretty cool. And he stood for what was right. And he had a statement to be made, and he didn't do it in your face. He did it hopefully through love and through his lifestyle and his actions rather than chirping in everybody's ear. You know, that for me is it's kind of a legacy piece, I guess, in a nutshell. You know, I would hope that somebody down the road goes down, you know, unearths this thing and says, hey, there's a lot of depth to this, and it's good musically, and it's, you know, it's good top to bottom type of thing, you know, mm-hmm. and we specifically wanted diversity on that record for obvious reasons, you know, and so so I'm proud of that record, and hopefully in another 20 to 30, 40 years, I'll still be proud of it, even if I'm, you know, dead and gone.
Well, man, thank you so much for your time. I am so excited for this. This is one of the most exciting things that I've heard about in the last few years, and I just had to pick your brain and get your thoughts on it, and I really appreciate that.
Well, Gabe, thank you so much, man. It's been an honor to talk to you. And I tell you what, as we have some things develop, I will I'll send you the info, or I'll send you the stuff or whatever, and I'll let you be the first guy to kind of have it and break it, or whatever you want to, however you want to do it. It's not like this is a big news thing anyway, but I would love to stay in contact with you and let you know the progress. Or you know what? Reach out to me. You've got my numbers. Reach out to me and let me know, you know, if you got questions or whatever. Just, hey, how are things going? I'll give you an update. No problem.
Awesome, man.
Than molasses and beautiful to the eye with a secondhand dress, pigtails and bows. She walks with a smile along the dirt.
That was our interview with Todd Collins. I'd like to thank Todd for man, just like calling me out of nowhere and just saying, hey, here's an update. And I mean, didn't really expect it at all. And man, just kind of seemed like the ball just started rolling downhill really fast and snowballing, and here we are. The project is in the works, and that's a big deal because of what's been going on in the world around us. And it seemed, you know, as I said in the interview, it just seemed like every time I got online, somebody new was posting about this album. And it's kind of like, I mean, I don't know how to describe it. It's just one of those weird hidden gems that only sold 25,000 copies, which was not very much at the time. Somehow won a Dove Award and can't really be, it's just not available right now.
Yeah. It's like that movie that when you're watching the movie awards wins all the movie awards. Like, I don't think I've ever actually heard of this movie, but here it is.
Yep. If you're trying to buy this album on eBay, I apologize. I buy it every time I see it on eBay. So
it
I have
rare.
I have multiple Very copies rare. Of it. Just letting you know.
I was trying to do some research for this specific podcast because I believe I was 6 or 7 when this album came out. So I don't know much about it. I knew it existed. I tried to look up the lyrics online. That's not a thing.
Yeah, no, there are some lyrics in the liner notes. I can tell you pretty much anything you want to know about this album.
There's some bad audio quality on YouTube released.
Yeah. They held me over when I was on the road until I finally got a file I could put on my phone. But yeah.
Yeah, so that's kind of where we're at with that. You know, this is a big deal for us as music fans because we believe that music is a perfect avenue to discuss racism and, you know, segregation and these topics that have been brought to the forefront in a hellacious way these last couple of weeks and months. And it's you know... You know, I'm hoping that, you know, an album like this will start the conversation and you know, and the reason why we're not going to get too deep into this is because we do hope to have a future episode when the album is done and completed. And, you know, but, you know, our hope and our prayer is that this album will be a great conversation starter. And, I mean, I guess one thing that I could ask you guys is what has music done to help you start that conversation in your own mind? And even, you know, when was like the first time that you even remember hearing a song dealing with race? For me, it was Walls by DC Talk.
Yeah, Walls was huge. You know, I wasn't raised in a environment where I only listened to Christian music, so I have to talk about N.W.A. Yeah. And a lot of what listening to that at 9 years old really shouldn't have been, but 9 and 10 years old and hearing these guys talk about stuff, maybe, you know, I'm beginning to realize how many people listen to music but don't digest music.
Sure.
And that's very evident.
We're not a part of that group.
Yeah. And it's very evident in what I'm seeing in people who are listening to these artists and then telling them, stop voicing these stuff. And it's like, hold up, did you listen to the lyrics? Because they've been voicing this stuff for forever. Their careers have been built around it. I mean, Walls is a great example of a song that first started me down that path. I mean, obviously, DC Talk, my Lord, Colored People.
Yeah.
What Have We Become?
Yeah.
You know, they just...
Free at Last.
Yeah, they were so willing to deal with so many issues and topics. And obviously Toby continued that in his solo career. Kevin's done that to a degree in his stuff. Yeah.
I think growing up listening to DC talk, I almost became desensitized to the topic. Because I, and not in a bad way, it's just, oh yeah, Colored People, great song. I'm not a racist. But I think one of the first things that like jumped out and grabbed my attention was I Hate Cats by Propaganda, where if you've not heard the song, it's just a guy talking, sounds like he's at a nightclub or something like that, and just he starts this song where he's just talking about how he's a dog person, he's a dog family, and like thinking about it, I'm a dog person, I like dogs, I'm not a big fan of cats, and
they're okay,
I mean, they're
if they stay over there,
yeah. But he, that's just his whole thing where he just keeps going. And so I find my, I found myself like, yeah, I'm a dog person. I don't necessarily understand why he's singing the song, but like, yeah, I agree with this. And then slowly but surely, by the end of the episode, you realize he's not talking about dogs and cats. He's talking about races and just all the different little nuances where, yeah, I'm not a racist, but... like, I know their kind.
Yeah.
That was one of the things that he would say. I don't hate, like, I just know their kind. So I hate cats. And so this cat's lazy. And I, you know, I kind of like this cat, but I can't trust him. And so he just goes through the whole thing. And just at the end of it, you think, okay, you step back and think, okay, like, I'm not a racist, but did I stereotype that person?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because they're that way. It's not even just with black people. Did I stereotype a woman because she's a woman? And did it, like you just yeah. have to go back through and think. It just really made me think
yeah.
before I say something or before I react to something, am I just being a dog person because that's what I know? Or should I? I still hate cats for real, though.
Well, that's fine.
But. Just their, I know they're kind. No, I'm kidding. But that was one that just really hit home with me.
Yeah.
Where, like I said, I don't hate people, but you can still fall into mm-hmm. little things that's not racist because you want it to be or you intend it to be, but is it? It could be. Yeah.
Right. So, you know, that whole song you're talking about, it's a giant metaphor for the phrase of I'm not racist, but.
Yeah.
That's what it's a metaphor for that.
Yeah.
And, you know, he really does a good job in that song of hitting on basically what I have come to the conclusion of is that for years we thought racism wasn't a thing.
Yeah.
And that was because in our media.
That says a lot about how we were raised,
yeah.
too.
Yeah, absolutely. And our media, our music, our movies, you know, we've been consumed with black culture.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, I like Will Smith. I can't be a racist. Do you like Will Smith or do you like Will Smith's acting? That's two different things.
Yes.
If Will Smith wasn't Will Smith on TV and you saw him walking down the street, would you still like him?
Yeah.
That's the problem. If you've ever seen the movie Office Space, one of my favorite scenes in it is the really nerdy white guy with glasses. His name's Michael Bolton. He's sitting in his car and he's listening to some like hardcore gangster rap. And a black gentleman comes walking down the street and you see him roll his window up and reach over quietly and lock his door. See, now that doesn't necessarily mean he's racist. That means he's prejudiced.
Yeah.
That means he's prejudging somebody based on something. It could even be the music he's listening to that has put preconceived notions into his mind about who this person is.
Well, if you think about it, the term systemic racism has been thrown around. If you think about it from like the very root of the problem, when the Emancipation Proclamation happened, it wasn't like, oh, we're equal now.
No.
They're very poor people. And if you look at poor communities, such as where we live, there's a lot of drugs, there's a lot of theft, there's a lot of really bad opioid epidemic right now in our white local community. And that's almost what, when the slaves were freed, they kind of had to dig their way to be equal, and some people,
which was impossible.
Near impossible. So poor communities lend its way to that, and now people think, okay, that's just the way it is.
Yeah. So that's actually coming back to our topic here with this race project. One of my favorite lines is on the song that I believe Kevin Max actually wrote the lyrics to it. It's called Prose Poems and Other Sundry Items. And there's a line in it where it says, we took away human rights and slowly gave them back as civil rights, and we did this under the guise of God-given rights, saying that the Constitution says all men are created equal, but in reality, we've never, ever believed that.
Yeah.
And we took away human rights. We took away people's humanity when we put people into slavery, and then we said, oh, now here, as a government, we have to start making you human again. Mm-hmm. And people think that we've, you know, oh, well, you know, we got civil rights. Oh, well, we are far from done, folks. We are far from equality. We are far from actually seeing that all men are created equal.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think, you know, that's why I think music is important, because it helps challenge us. It helps us, you know, it's one of the few times, unfortunately, that people will actually listen. Mm-hmm. And
I believe music is why I was able to not get stuck in the rut of racism.
Yeah.
I mean, between bands like Arrested Development, not the show bands, you know, they had a song, Mr. Wendell, and so many other songs that talk about racism and such. And then, you know, Rage Against the Machine.
Yeah,
I'm amazed how many people listen to Rage Against the Machine and not understand what they were talking about.
Yeah.
But, you know, they were talking about systemic oppression by government. And, you know, here we are seeing some of the stuff come to fruition, and people are finally starting to wake up.
Yeah.
But music is a catalyst. Music has always been a catalyst for change.
Yeah. And that's why, you know, this is one of the biggest reasons why we do this podcast, is because we believe that music can bring change. It is that powerful. And we just want to let you guys know that we're going to be releasing a playlist that goes alongside this episode. It'll be available on Spotify and Apple Music. It's called Racial Reconciliation. We'll be posting the links to that. There's all kinds of songs dealing with racism, prejudice, segregation. We got songs from all the way from the 80s till this year on the playlist, and it's full of a lot of stuff. And I would encourage you, even if you don't like the genre, just listen to the words, try to learn something, try to listen and challenge yourself. That's kind of what we want you guys to do with this show, is just listen. I mean, that's how you learn, is by listening.
And I know one of the songs that I saw in there was from John Rubin, who, that song specifically is more about prejudice, like you said, because it talks about him being Jewish growing up and the other side of his family being Roman Catholic and just all kinds of different things. So there's a lot of different perspectives on that album. Not album, listen to me, just playlist. But it's a good playlist too. It's not like, oh, this is a bad song, but listen to the good lyrics. There's a lot of good music on there too.
Yeah, I mean, there's artists on here such as Lecrae, Propaganda, Five Iron Frenzy. Five Iron Frenzy has a lot of great songs about Native American racism.
Did you get Steve Taylor on there?
Steve Taylor's on there. Switchfoot, Grits, Gospel Gangstas. Even Kirk Franklin's on there. So check it out. If anything, check out a lot of these great, there's a lot of black artists in Christian music that haven't gotten a lot of recognition over the years until recently with CHH coming out. So I would really encourage you, especially like there is a lot of really good Christian rap from the 90s that never really saw the light of day, like Gospel Gangstas. You know, Grits kind of trailblazed the trail when it came to that. And, I mean, it's come a long way, but it's only been in the last couple years.
Yeah, I mean, even this album we're talking about here, The Erased Part, I mean, most people didn't even know about it.
Yeah.
I mean, so it's...
Yeah, it's not even on our playlist because that doesn't exist. Yeah,
there's a lot out there for you to check out that is very powerful and will educate you in a multitude of ways.
Listen, read, learn, but also be careful what you're reading. There's a lot of garbage out there, but...
Yes.
That's all.
So anyway... Thank you guys for checking us out. If you know somebody that likes the Goatee Brothers and are just like curious, like, you know, share this with them because I'm sure they would love to hear this. It's a great update. And yeah. In the world today, we need good news. So
do you have a song of the week? I know we're not doing a bonus episode. Maybe we'll throw a little bonus out here.
Song
or
of the week.
A release of the week, an album of the week? Something you've been listening to lately?
You put me on the spot.
That's what you do to me literally every single week.
Yeah, you know, Colony House released a song with John Foreman called When the Walls Come Crashing Down. So okay.
Ooh.
That was really good.
I haven't heard that one yet.
Yeah, pretty good.
And Switchfoot has also been releasing live
covers
via Zoom.
Oh, yeah.
A whole bunch of stuff.
So I'm going to give a shout out to somebody who actually appears on the Goatee Erase project. He is on the Say Amen track. You'll know him from that. And you'll also know him from the track from Audio Adrenaline's
Underdog.
He's the guy who speaks on that, the preaching part towards the end. His name is Chris Williamson. He just put out an album called PC Dub. The album's actually called Vintage. But it's got some old school Christian gospel flair to it, but it's also got some newer stuff on it, featuring somebody that's actually been on our podcast before, Cannon.
Yep.
So, you know, it's worth looking up, checking out.
So, I'm going to cheat. No, I'm kidding. I'm going to use something that I've already used, is that John Rubin album that we were just talking about, and specifically the song Other People. Go listen to that album. John Rubin always has an interesting perspective on things, and he has a pretty good way of kind of putting it out there. Also, The Ghost Inside released a new album.
Yes.
So this isn't necessarily a Christian band, but I did see them on tour with August Burns Red, Once Upon a Time. And shortly after that, they were in a severe bus wreck where... I know the driver lost his life. I believe both drivers lost their lives and the drummer lost a leg and it was bad. It was really, really bad. And specifically they released a song called Aftermath and there's a video for it just of kind of their comeback. And I think that's kind of fitting to, I don't know, encourage me because where we are in America right now, there's a lot of times where I'm sure a lot of people, especially me, are thinking, how do we come back from this? And then something else hits, and then something else hits. There's murder hornets, and there's coronavirus, and there's who knows what else. Yep. And just to see them kind of be like, hey, we made it. We're here. We're back. It was very encouraging for me. So go watch that video and try not to cry. I dare you. Because I certainly did.
Yeah, also, I'm going to give a shout-out to a TV show, but it's all based around music. If you have not checked out Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist yet, you want to talk about power of music. This show really hits on how powerful music can be and how healing and emotional it can be. And I really recommend it, and it's a good time.
Yes, and while you're at it, go watch Just Mercy, too, because it's free.
Please watch Great. Just Mercy. Please, I'm begging you. That and Selma.
Found out they redid Roots, and it's on Hulu.
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to watch that.
I have not got a chance to watch it, but I just found that out this week, and I'm going to check that out. So, yeah, guys, before we head off in the sunset, we've said this at the end of every episode. Guys, love your neighbor. And be a good representation of Christ. Love others the way that Christ commanded to love us. Put yourself aside. Put your differences aside and listen to your neighbor. Maybe you don't agree with them. Maybe you've got some differences, but just listen to them and show them love regardless. And don't be afraid to get in the trenches with them because that could go a long way to... ending this battle that we have. And it starts with you.
Especially with your close friends.
Yeah.
I know I'm not one to get on Facebook, for example, and throw words back and forth, but there are some times that I've seen things on Facebook and I'll text the person individually and call them and say, hey, let's talk about this.
Yeah.
Because things put on social media, they always look angry. And it's just anger breeds more anger, and nobody learns from someone they hate. It's just the yelling words back and forth at walls. So I kind of challenge someone that's listening that instead of posting something on their social media page, get, especially if they're a close friend of yours, text them and say, hey, why do you think that? And let's talk about this. Maybe we can call. I can't really go out for coffee right now. Maybe wear a mask, put a straw through it. But yeah, reach out to one person and just say, hey, thinking about you. Let's talk about what's going on.
Yeah. And we'll see you next time.
Don't forget to tip your waitress. Oh, this 2 weeks. No, hold on. Cut. Rewind. Don't forget to tip your waiters and waitresses. Thanks.
Peace, guys.
2 weeks in a row. Come on, man.
Don't forget to tip your waiters and waitresses. Thanks.